Vielen Dank und ich bin sehr froh, dass ich hier in Bern bin, aber ich kann nicht auf Deutsch reden, weil mein Deutsch ist nicht gut genug, um meinen ganzen Vortrag zu präsentieren. Davon spreche ich Englisch jetzt. Aber die Fragen kann ich auf Deutsch nehmen, das ist kein Problem. Well, it is very symbolic then that we have this discussion about Russian Revolution here in Switzerland for one reason, which is obvious. It was exactly the place where Lenin learned about the revolution in Russia. And of course, it was already mentioned yesterday that Lenin was, or at least seemed to be desperate, just a few months or weeks before the revolution. He made this famous statement that his generation would not survive long enough to witness the revolution. And interestingly enough, this statement was addressed to young Swiss socialists. To people like Tamara yesterday. One may think that Lenin completely lost hope, but in fact, I think the situation was much more paradoxical, and that's the first thing we have to discuss in terms of hope and despair. Because I think it's very interesting that this situation of the left, somewhere between hope and despair, is something which is very familiar to us now. I think this is not something not known or not experienced. It's something which we feel very much today as well. Because on the one hand, we see that Lenin was following what was going on, and from the point of view of social and economic and political analysis, it was absolutely clear for him that revolution was coming. And by the way, it is very interesting that one Russian historian, Vladimir Loginov, who is one of the most most interesting and most kind of knowledgeable specialists in Lenin's biography, keeps insisting that Lenin never lost hope in revolution, quoting other letters and other statements made almost about the same time. So how come that approximately about the same time, Lenin made a few statements about approaching revolution, and then later he makes this very same statement that he's not going to survive till the revolution? I think the answer is very clear. There was a contradiction between analysis and experience. And this is a very serious problem, because what was the analysis showing was the old system was falling apart. The old system was facing a tremendous crisis, and there was no way to overcome this crisis without major upheavals and without revolutionary changes, on the one hand. So objectively, it was absolutely obvious that the whole thing was falling apart and the revolution was approaching. At the same time, at the psychological level, at the level of personal experience, what you could see was something very different. Because this is a very interesting phenomenon, that revolutions always come out as a surprise, even and especially for the revolutionaries. By the way, Lenin was not alone in that kind of contradictory feeling. If we are, if we read the book of Sukhanov, who was his major political critic from the Menshevik side, and who also was considered by Lenin himself as one of the best historians of the revolution, in Sukhanov's notes, in Sukhanov's memoirs, it is also a very important point when he speaks about himself sitting in Petrograd in some kind of office or study, working with papers and books, and then his secretary coming and saying, there is revolution in Petrograd. And Sukhanov answers, don't tell me nonsense. I know everything about revolutions. I am a specialist in revolutions. I spent all my life preparing Russian revolution. And you're saying that revolution is happening? No, I don't see any evidence. Well, then he left his room, went into the streets. He saw the revolution was actually really taking place. There were crowds, there were shootings, and so on. So in that sense, what I'm saying is that Lenin was not alone in this kind of trap, being trapped between hope and despair, analysis and experience. And experience in the years coming to the revolution, in the whole decade before the revolution, was extremely negative. This was an experience of defeat after defeat after defeat, both political and organizational, and in some ways even personal. One can also give you another example, which is very telling. It happened in Paris, unfortunately not in Zurich. I'd rather prefer to quote Zurich, but no, that happened. That event took place in Paris when Lenin was sitting in a cafe with a bunch of other Bolshevik social democrats, and then they just looked at each other and said, "Wow, but we have the quorum for the Central Committee meeting. Why don't we declare this breakfast as a Central Committee meeting and make decisions? Because there are enough of us to make political decisions here." And then Lenin was extremely angry and he said, "Yes, we have the quorum. The problem is we don't have a party." So, the first thing which I am going to tell you is that revolution is something which is coming out always as something unexpected, and not necessarily revolution, social change in more general terms. But you have to be prepared. You're always failing to predict the exact moment when things are going to change, when things are going to begin shifting. But you should be morally and politically, analytically, intellectually, politically prepared for such things. And that was a tremendous difference between Lenin and others, many others. Because it's not just an accident that he went to read Hegel in Zurich months before the revolution. Was it just because of the need to do something academic? Partly yes. But the problem is, and the question is, how was he doing it? He definitely was concentrated on self-education or self-re-education in many ways. Re-education, reinterpreting, re-understanding Marx. An attempt to reread Das Kapital in a different way. Not as an economic book, but as a philosophical book. That was the whole project. To reread Capital as philosophy. But why? I think it was absolutely essential because it had something absolutely in direct connection with what was happening next, because he was preparing himself to thinking about unexpected, to thinking about unpredictable, and to train his brains in a specific way, which was exactly the right way to do politics in the situation, in the context of unpredictability and uncertainty. So then coming to the second point. And the second point is that social change or revolution, or even radical reform, even radical struggles for reform, which are possible in Western Europe, by the way, now, I think, these struggles move us into the field of unpredictable and uncertain. The era of uncertainty is already beginning. You see, that is a big problem for the left for so many years, that we are expecting things to develop according to the rules, according to the way they developed before. But then at some point, things begin to change and then everything is different. So we have to make decisions in the context of unpredictability or uncertainty when you do not have clear answers. What are going to be the consequences of your own decisions and your own activities? And Now turning to the bad news, so to speak, because you have to see that the consequences of your decisions may be dangerous, risky, and negative, even for yourself and for your political cause. So the important thing here is that at some point you have to accept history through accepting risks. One of the problems with most of Lenin's rivals in politics in 1917 was that they were trying to minimize risks. And the politics of minimizing risk, this is something which works in the context of normal bourgeois development. If you act according to the rules in a normal bourgeois society, that's how you should act. To adjust and to also to minimize the damage you're going to face, given the strength of the enemy also. But once you're in the situation of a revolution, a situation of uncertainty, a situation of unpredictability, minimizing risk is the way to failure, is the way to disaster. Again, not only for you, but for the others. But at the same time, accepting risks doesn't mean that you guarantee that you're not going to fail. And again, coming to the point when Lenin was leaving Switzerland, this is a very interesting point because now Russia is full of propaganda about Lenin being a German spy, Lenin accepting the money from Parvus, this other social democrat who supposedly gave him German money to subvert Russia and so on and so on. At this very point, there are two movies which were shown on Russian television simultaneously on two different channels. One is called The Demon of Revolution, about Parvus, and another is called Trotsky. In one movie, it is Parvus who is buying Lenin to subvert Russia, and then Lenin goes to Russia and subverts Russia. Then Russia collapses, because Lenin, with some German money, enters Russia, and then the very moment he enters Russia, everything collapses all of a sudden. The power of money, by the way, this is very, very typical for the current thinking, of Russian elite and Russian liberal intelligence. Everything is done with money. If you just give a certain person enough money, the person will do anything, and there is nothing that can withstand the pressure of money. In the other film, however, exactly the same story is told, but the money goes to Trotsky. So people who are watching two films simultaneously are a bit confused. Anyhow, the point is that making a decision about going from Switzerland to Russia through Germany was not an easy decision. If you drop this stupid story about Germans just buying Lenin with money, you understand that the decision he made to move publicly, through enemy's territory into Russia was a very risky decision in political terms, but not only in political terms. Because one thing which historians know, and which publicistic, which Russian columnists today try to forget, is that this whole thing with moving through Germany into Russia, through the enemy territory, was absolutely public, and it was already a kind of crime. It was already a kind of breaking the rules. And by the way, the person who was involved in negotiations together with Lenin was Yuli Martov, the leader of Mensheviks, who was involved in the very same negotiations with Germans. And at some point, he finally decided not to go because he didn't accept the conditions. And then he tried to go through France, and French didn't let him. And then this very same Martov had to make the very same trip through Germany, but later, and not so spectacular. And then, if you imagine Lenin arriving to Russia from Germany, on the one hand, it was a kind of public relations thing, definitely. Because, well, everybody knew that he went from a German territory. On the other hand, however, again, what I'm saying, which is not very often quoted now, and it's very clear in the correspondence, Lenin was expecting that he could be arrested immediately upon the arrival. So he was taking a very serious risk. He could have been arrested and even could have been shot. So in that sense, you only can make politics in a situation of uncertainty when you are able to take risks, including risking your own life. But he didn't only risk his life, he risked his political reputation, of course. So he made this bet, and he won. Because when he finally arrived to Petrograd, there were armed guards waiting for him, but they were not arresting him, they were saluting him. So that was the kind of first small victory which he achieved when he arrived. And then coming to the next point, which is the actual revolutionary process. Again, often it is seen that Bolsheviks were a consolidated small group which took power after the first wave of revolution. It's not exactly so. Actually, it was exactly the opposite, because Bolshevik party in Petrograd was extremely disunited. And again, it is very interesting that most of the Bolsheviks, who were loyal students of Lenin, loyal supporters of Lenin, for many years, they disagreed completely with his approach to be so aggressive against provisional government and to be ready to take power immediately overthrowing this government. Why? Partly because, again, coming back to the initial story, even revolutionaries, like generals, are preparing for the previous revolution. You know, generals are always preparing for the previous war, for the last war. But that was also the case of revolutionaries, of all sorts of politicians. They were thinking in the context of 1905, while Lenin was one who was able to think in the context of 1917, understanding that the context changed dramatically, and you should go much faster and take measures, make decisions which are much more radical and much more risky than the ones which they already experienced in the previous revolution. Because when Kamenev and Zinoviev were in a serious crisis opposing Lenin, these were the two people who were the most loyal supporters of Lenin for many years. So because they were opposing Lenin, defending the policies of Lenin of 10 years ago against Lenin of 1917, they were defending the policies of Lenin in 1905 or 1907, against the policies of Lenin in 1917. So revolutionaries can be very conservative, by the way. The very fact that people call themselves revolutionaries or radicals doesn't make them politically capable of making tough choices. Very often they're very conservative people. They're dogmatic people often. And dogmatic thinking is not only about how you read Marx. It's also about how you understand the situation of today, whether you have a clear-cut kind of model of what to do, and you're just trying to impose this model on the events, or you are getting the dialectics of the development and understanding and analyzing that simultaneously in a kind of online process immediately and making decisions immediately. So what was Lenin doing? He was trying to read the spirit of the masses rather than the ideas of his supporters and comrades. So in that sense, much of the political struggle within the Bolshevik Party, which was actually growing very fast, by the way, was also a struggle of Lenin to establish direct connections with the masses, with the radicalized masses and activists, above the heads of his own apparatus and his own supporters and his own political friends, and pushing and pulling these friends further to the left. So it's another lesson. You have to overcome resistance, not only from your enemies, but from your friends as well. And I'm speaking about real friends, because often people are saying, why did Lenin not kick out of the party Kamenev and Zinoviev, who were totally opposed to the rebellion, totally opposed to the seizure of power, to the overthrow of the provisional government. Why didn't he kick them out from the party? And the answer is obvious. They remained his friends and comrades. It was a political struggle about understanding reality. It was not a political struggle about principles, but it was a very serious struggle about how to interpret these principles in the situation of a revolution. So you have to overcome the resistance of your own friends, but you should not turn your friends into your enemies. So this is yet another lesson which should be learned, and which makes a tremendous difference, by the way, between Lenin and Stalin. Because in many ways, Stalin acted the same way. Say, in 1929, he was facing the resistance of Bukharin, who was actually defending the same policies which Stalin himself defended a few years ago. But the situation changed, and Stalin had to crush Bukharin. What was the outcome? We know what was the outcome. Bukharin was killed in the long run. Not in such a long run. He was killed quite soon. So in that sense, Stalinist approach was totally different. Once you started opposing the leader, once you started opposing the general line or the dominant line, you are becoming an enemy. Lenin's approach was different. Which doesn't mean that Lenin was very nice to people with whom he quarreled. He was terrible, actually. If you read his texts, he was just terrible. And this is also very interesting because he could attack people furiously. And then next day he worked with the very same people without any problem. And there was no problem on either side. Because that was just considered to be the culture of debate, but not it was not transferred into action, unlike Stalinist period, when things were done in a very different way. So so now coming to the very last lesson, which I consider the most difficult one and the most problematic one. One reading of October takeover, October coup or October revolution, no matter how you call it, is that, well, authoritarian Bolsheviks destroyed emerging Russian democracy. Another leftist reading on the left, partly on the far left as well, is that on the contrary, it was the democratic initiative of the masses which Bolsheviks represented, and this spontaneous movement of the Soviets, of the councils, which was led by the Bolsheviks but not controlled by Bolsheviks around that time, was a victory of a more radical form of direct or semi-direct democracy. And then this kind of victory, of course, was lost during the Civil War. I think Christoph will be speaking about that in more detail. So on the one hand, in terms of democracy, if we're coming to the issue of democracy, one reading is it was an undemocratic action. On the other hand, the other reading is it was a victory of direct democracy over bourgeois liberal democracy, which actually was not even installed institutionally properly, because provisional government, don't forget it, was never elected by anyone. Don't forget that. However, I think there was a third reading, which my very good friend Alexander Shubin, a very good Russian historian, is now proving to be very, very well, kind of rooted in the documents, is that ironically, you can see the process undemocratic and democratic at the same time. You see, on the one hand, you can see, for example, peasants coming to a meeting democratically. I mean, it's a real open meeting. And people are voting, and they're voting to burn the estate of the landlord, burn the house of the landlord, kill the family of the landlord, and destroy all the unnecessary things like books and the library and the pictures and other stupid things which peasants don't need for their households. Is this a nice thing? It's not a nice thing. Is it a democracy? In a way, it is. Because the decision is made completely democratically. It's a majority vote. And then what happens in 1917 after the Bolshevik takeover, quite often, there were quite a few stories like that. From the town, Bolsheviks were sending sailors and soldiers, Red soldiers, imposing some kind of undemocratic order, like don't kill just families of the innocent people just for the class reason, or don't destroy libraries or destroy don't destroy pictures, rather bring them to museums and so on. Peasants often opposed that. It was an undemocratic decision. So what I'm saying is that when you have a spontaneous process, it's not a nice process often. It is often a very nasty process. People are not necessarily behaving as good guys. Spontaneous democracy is not necessarily bringing good fruits. At the same time, sometimes you have to use authoritarian measures to establish minimal order and minimal civilized rules. Does it mean that I'm supporting autocracy now? Of course not. Because here you're coming to the biggest problem. The problem is that you often have to use authoritarian measures. But it's very hard, very difficult, and very complicated to move away once you started using them, to return to the democratic process, to the democratic decision-making methods, once you already tried authoritarian measures, because they're so easy and so fast that it's also a kind of subversion. You subvert yourself, you seduce yourself through authoritarianism, especially when this authoritarianism initially is well justified. So, finally, what I'm saying is that all these lessons of Russian Revolution are still of importance for us. Maybe we'll have no chance to use these lessons in practical politics, which means that our lives are not going to be very successful. We are going to live very boring lives under the bourgeois regime. But if we are happy enough to survive till the revolution, like Lenin said in Switzerland, then we are going to face very tough choices, very serious moral dilemmas. And this is what history is about. Thank you.